from the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's that Josh Arnold podcast. Oh, my goodness. How the heck are you? My gosh, hello. Nice to be here. I think technically a day late, but much like your garbage service, because we had Labor Day on Monday, everything's kind of pushed back a day, isn't it? So why not? I'm glad it worked out this way, because yesterday, our guest this week was unavailable. But thankfully, they're available today, so it all worked out. And man, oh man, this person really means a lot to me. A very important person in the world to many, many people. Well-liked, well-loved, and for good reason. My guest this week is you. Oh my gosh, how are you? You're looking good. I hope you're feeling good as well. You know, it was a nice long weekend, wasn't it? 4-day weekend for myself, even though I did end up I worked Saturday and Sunday. But I'll get to that in just a little bit. So I hope you enjoyed. I hope you had an extended weekend, and I hope you enjoyed it. The sponsor of this week's That Josh Arnold podcast. Oh, I have fond memories of this sponsor, and I don't currently own this sponsor's product, but boy, I will. Sponsoring the show this week. A porch swing. Oh, boy, I love a porch swing. When I was a kid, my grandparents had a porch swing and loved it. Loved it. Sit out there outdoors on a nice day and lull myself into a peaceful, comfortable ease. And especially, you know, sitting out there with my grandma or my grandpa, and they're asking questions about my life, and I'm asking questions about theirs, and just really nice visits on a porch swing. I'm an old man when it comes to this stuff. I love things like porch swings. Right now on my porch, I have two rocking chairs, and that's, you know, it does the same thing, essentially. But there is something about the porch swing that's, you know, the creaking of the chains and... I will eventually have one, and I hope, you know, maybe they're not your thing. That's okay, but if they are, I hope you get to enjoy a porch swing very, very soon. My dream is to have one of those houses at some point that has a porch, like, that goes all the way around the house. Man, that, just like those old school... manners. I love that. So I would probably have two porch swings then. You know, one to watch the sunrise and one to watch the sunset, essentially. Boy, that would be, yeah. You know what? I'll just make that happen. I will will it to happen and work to make it happen. Thank you, Porch Swing, for sponsoring the podcast this week. Oh, I'm getting wistful now for visits with my grandparents. Down here in the basement, things are fine. Looks like they're doing some slightly pre-fall cleaning, getting some boxes moved around and stuff. So the dust is kind of in the air and I can see it. You know, the sun peeks through one of those small, like really tiny windows that's over there. There's only one, but I can see the dust particles moving through the ray of sunlight. And, I'm feeling it in my lungs a little bit. What do you say we get out of here and hop on aboard the TJA Express? That's right. The Arn Track, the world's only steam-powered monorail. And while we're moving, I'll just send a quick thank you to the folks of Cincinnati who came out to the Liberty Funny Bone this past weekend to see my stand-up show, and Jeff Oskey was with me, and man, we had a fine time. Just a wonderful club, terrific people working there, running the place, terrific audiences who came out, really good people. Folks brought me some gifts, too. I'd like to thank Chelsea for my Camp Crystal Lake sign that now proudly hangs in my office and next to my street sign that says Elm Street, so it's perfect. And I was also given, I don't know if you guys know this, I have holiday birds at my house, these little birds that are dressed for fall and Halloween and Thanksgiving and Easter and Christmas. I started buying them sort of ironically, and then I grew to actually sort of like them. And I was gifted a new Christmas bird as well. So thank you so much for that. I don't have your, I'm a moron and I don't have your name. So you know who you are. And you know, just because I'm forgetting your name right now doesn't mean I don't care. Thank you again for the wonderful bird. And thanks again to everybody who came out. Man, it was a lot of fun. And I see that we've arrived at our first destination. Oh, one of my favorite spots in the world, Vocabville. Yes, I love Vocabville because it's where we learn about words we may not be familiar with, or maybe they're words that we've heard of before, but we weren't quite clear on their definition. Well, this is a fun one today. It's glabrous, and it's spelled G-L-A-B-R-O-U-S. Glabrous, and I believe it's glabrous, actually. So it's an adjective that means, quite simply, bald. That's right. Lacking in hair. So I'm sure you know you have glabrous people in your life. I'm almost one. I would say I'm glabrousing. Not totally bald, but certainly getting there. Glabrous. How about that? So impress your friends and family by if you have a loved one who's glabrous or a friend, you can say, it's my favorite glabrous person joining me. And what does that mean? And it means bald. They may not be thrilled, but you'll learn them something. Glabrous, bald. How majestic is the glabrous eagle that soars above? I don't know if it would count that way, but yes, glabrous. And, maybe it's more polite than bald. If you walked up to somebody and said, "Boy, are you bald?" They might go, "Hey, what the hell?" But if you walk up and go, "Boy, are you glabrous?" They might, sort of act like they knew what it meant and "Well, thank you very much. I'm going to take that as a compliment." I hope you get to use glabrous sometime. In fact, make a point of it to use glabrous sometime this week. We're cruising on down the tracks here again. Ah, boy, that fresh air. Now, I can feel it through my remaining hair. For those who are truly glabrous, you may not. But I'm sure the breeze feels good on your pate. Oh my gosh. Now, if you're totally glabrous, the hair is not standing up on the back of your neck like it is for me right now. Why? Because here we are in Fearville. That's right. Now, I know it's ominous sounding, but I think we've all learned that Fearfield is not a bad place to be. It's just where we learn about certain phobias and things like that. Today's phobia that we're going to talk about here in Fearfield is very common, but you may not be aware of what it's called. But boy, is this a good one. And I'm almost certain you know somebody who has this, who suffers from this affliction. The phobia this week is coulrophobia. Now, this is not fear of being cool. My gosh, can you imagine if I had that? I'd have to be a totally different person. My cool is off the charts. I can't imagine being afraid of oneself like that. coulrophobia, and some of you, you already know this, don't you? Because maybe you're a sufferer, or you know somebody who is. Coulrophobia is the fear of clowns. That's right. And this is a widespread phobia. I would guess this is in top five phobias that people have. One of my best friends suffers from coulrophobia. By the way, if you're interested, it's C-O-U-L-R-O, phobia. And I don't know the etymology of it. I started looking it up, and I couldn't really get a straight answer. That's kind of what, you know, hasn't that become the problem sometimes with looking up facts now? You have to weed through a bunch of other things before you can actually get to the actual answer. But boy, good luck looking up the trying to verify some news story. It's almost impossible. I mean, I have given up on that. I just, a few months ago, I went, I'm out. I'm out. The news is not for me. If something important is happening, I'm sure I'll hear about it. And yeah, it's working out pretty well, actually. So, coulrophobia. What is it? What is it about the clown that terrifies us so much? I mean, they really can be creepy, and I'm not a coulrophobe. But they can certainly be scary. I mean, I know there are scary clowns in pop culture, of course. You've got Pennywise, which might be the most terrifying clown. In fact, Stephen King is purportedly a coulrophobe, and he must have been creeping himself out to no end writing that character. And you've also got the Killer Clowns from Outer Space, if you're lucky enough to have seen that cinematic masterpiece. That's a fun one. But you've got the clown in Poltergeist, that clown doll. But yes, people can be very, I mean, even harmless clowns really frighten people. So I wonder what it's about. Like when you really get deep into the psychology of it, is it the fact that their faces are obscured in such a cartoonish manner, or that they're loud and abrasive with their honking horns and their squirting flowers and their giant shoes, and they're running around sort of erratically, and they're always out to trick or surprise? Is it? There is like something very unsettling about a person whose features are disguised, acting maniacally. Sort of. I mean, I guess on the surface level, it is sort of obvious why people would be creeped out by clowns. But the whole thing is they're meant to spread joy. They're meant to make people laugh. I look at Sid Haig's character in the the Rob Zombie trilogy, House of a Thousand Corpses, and Three from Hell, The Devil's Rejects, the second one. I mean, he even says, he looks at one kid and says, don't you think we're funny? I mean, I'm paraphrasing. But he goes, how come you don't like clowns? Don't you think, aren't we funny? He says it a little more brashly than I did. But, and at that moment, no, I certainly don't think you're funny. You're terrifying. Boy, what an interesting phobia. That's really widespread, I think. Coulrophobia. Boy. If you suffer from it. And somebody wrote in, Brad, he actually wrote in with this. Said his oldest daughter suffers from it, and he goes to he likes to tease her, I think. if not, Brad, what are you doing? I mean, you got to every now and again hide a clown doll in her room or something, but or maybe not. Maybe it could be really traumatizing. Anyway, what a good. What a good phobia. Nice trip here to Fairfield. And I'm sure we'll be back to Fairfield very, very soon. As we head back to the basement, there's something I'd like to tell you about, something that my producer, Jason, suggested I listen to, and I did. And I got to tell you, I absolutely loved it. It's another podcast. I've only heard this one episode, but I'm going to listen to more because I think the host is a fascinating man. It's the Tim Ferriss Show, and I listened to episode number 485, where he interviews Jerry Seinfeld, and it's about an hour and a half long, and I'm going to tell you this. It's the most informative, accurate, entertaining podcast on stand-up comedy I've ever heard. There is a glut of podcasts out there about stand-up comedy. I mean, look, there seems to be a voracious appetite for people wanting to learn about the craft of stand-up and how people do it and what kind of person it takes to do it and that kind of thing. I think there are more comedy podcasts than there are comedy fans. That's just my opinion. And I have been on a handful, and I have listened to more than my fair share. And this episode of The Tim Ferriss Show with Jerry Seinfeld is the end-all, be-all of comedy podcasts. Everything Jerry has to say, in my opinion, dead on regarding stand-up comedy. I mean, now, some of the insight he gives into how he operates, how he writes, how he rewrites, how he takes, you know, how he works, different than mine, but that doesn't really matter. The specifics of that don't matter. He speaks so well about the work and the craft and the art that you, I think it's, like, as I said, the end-all be-all. You never have to listen to another podcast about stand-up if you don't want to. This is great. If you have any interest in stand-up comedy, if you're a fan of Jerry's, if you're not a fan of Jerry, I mean, just check this one out. Again, it's episode number 485, and I give you that number so that it's easier for you to scroll through and locate. It's terrific. And this Tim Ferriss gentleman, obviously incredibly bright. Jerry's very at ease talking to him. In fact, at one point, you know, Tim kind of starts to wrap things up, and Jerry goes, no, let's keep going. I'm having fun. Well, that's the ultimate compliment. If your guest goes, no, I've got time, especially a guy like Seinfeld, who doesn't need to be doing it. He just really loves what he's talking about. He's having fun with Tim. Oh, man, give this thing a listen. It flies. I have a feeling that this is going to be one of those things I listen to every 6 months. Just as a nice positive reminder. Seinfeld's also part of something I watch every 6 months. It's an older documentary called Comedian, and he's essentially the main focus. Orny Adams is the other sort of the flip side to Jerry's story in that, so he's also a main focus. But and he's a terrific comedian as well. But he was at a different level when Comedian was made. If you haven't seen that documentary, check it out. You'll learn a lot about comedians. You may learn more than you want. The one issue I have with that documentary is you don't see a lot of the fun side of stand-up. It's a lot of about the blood, sweat, and tears. So it doesn't show a lot of the laughter. There's some, but it really is about the blood, sweat, and tears. And to a certain extent, so is this Tim Ferriss podcast. But man, oh man, I loved it. I could listen to Seinfeld talk about comedy all day. And that's another reason that I really recommend this episode over other stand-up comedian podcasts. Is because if you want to learn about stand-up and you want to listen, you know, either you're interested in trying it yourself or you just want to know about that world, that universe, don't you want to hear it from the guy who's the best at it? Don't you want to hear about that universe from one of the most successful comedians of all time? And not just, I mean, obviously financially, but also in terms of his output of work, the quality of work, how it's tested, how it's lasted, you know, it's time tested. I mean, my gosh, you can listen. There have got to be 100,000 podcasts out there where you can listen to up-and-coming comedians talk about their craft. I'd rather listen to the guy who's been doing it for 40-plus years. I just would. The experience and the knowledge that he's accrued far outweighs the lack of experience and knowledge that the newer comedians have. I always feel like a scam artist when I'm on a comedy podcast, because I've been doing it for about 12 years, and that's, relatively speaking, not long. It just isn't. And sure, I've got things to say about it, but whenever I do those podcasts, I always say, hey, look, in my experience, this is how it is. I would never try to go, well, comedians do this, or all comedians should do this, or they do. You know what? No. What do I know? I just know what I know. I don't know. But Seinfeld knows. I mean, he's an expert. He's an expert. He lives, breathes, and eats comedy. So, yes, I'm going to go ahead and defer to him when it comes to learning about stand-up comedy. And I think you should, too. And I also think you'll really, really enjoy it. What do I have here? An email? Let's see here. Oh, this comes from Gary Pickle. That's right. Oh, my gosh. I don't know if you remember this, but a while back I suggested at the end of one of the podcasts that we should all learn a skill that we've been wanting to learn and, you know, give it a shot. Well, Gary did it. He says, I took your advice. I've always wanted to be able to hand sew with a needle and thread. Thanks to YouTube, I'm now a semi-professional seamstress. So I think that means, actually, I wonder what the male equivalent of seamstress is. I'm gonna look this up while I'm talking. So he says semi-professional, which suggests to me that sometimes he sews for fun and other times he gets paid for it. That would be semi-professional. So good for you, Gary. I hope that is the case. A male seamstress, tailor, of course, but this is kind of what I was really going for here. Seamster. Why not? A seamster. I think I prefer that to tailor. Yeah, I'm a seamster. Huh? Well, I'm a male seamstress. I'm a seamster. And I'm part of a union, so I'm a Teamster seamster. If you laughed at that, you're at the right place. I'll tell you that. So, he did it. Good for you, Gary. You know, I used to know how to do that. I did. I used to know how to sew with a needle and thread. I learned it in home ec in seventh grade and probably forgot it within 3 months how to like sew on a button and stuff. And I wish I knew how to sew on a button. Because I button, now look, there are a lot of jokes to be made here, all right, about me losing buttons. Let's try to refrain. Let's try to behave ourselves, not go there. But I do go through a fair amount of buttons on my shorts. Again, enough with the jokes. Here's why. I think I button my pants wrong, all right? I think what I do is when I go to button like my shorts, I grab the button and pull to the hole. Whereas I think I'm supposed to be grabbing sort of the waistband above the button. And then once the button reaches the hole, then touch the button and put it through the hole. I don't do that. I am pulling from the button. And I think that that's why I lose buttons. Now, am I fooling myself? No, you know what? I'm not fooling myself because here's why. I am overweight, but my waist is not overweight. I can honestly wear a 34 pant. I can wear 34 pants or 34 shorts. I have a 34 waist. I prefer a 36, but I can wear a 34 and it's not uncomfortable. Now, if I were to wear my like suit pants, how you're supposed to, I'd be like a 48 or whatever because it would be around my belly, but I don't wear them like that. I always wear them down below my waist. And if you've seen my act or maybe you've heard me talk about this on the big show, I call myself a half fat man because below my belly, there is no, I don't have any fat. I have the waist of a thin man. I have the waist of a thin man. And my shorts are not, I'm not losing buttons because I'm too big down there. Well, the waist, all right. Again, let's try to refrain from any sort of jokes. But, I think I am losing them because I pull on them and I need to know. I just need to, you know what? I'll do what you did, Gary. You went to YouTube. You learned. I'm going to do it too. All right. I am going to relearn how to sew with a needle and thread. And you know what I would really like to do? I would like to take home ec again. I would like to learn. I'd like to go through a semester, take some adult home ec class. Wouldn't that be cool? You can go in, you learn how to sew on a button, you learn how to maybe like hang a picture correctly. You learn, and that's something I can do. I can do. But wouldn't it be cool to sort of go back, learn how to properly clean an oven, or learn how to light a pilot light? I mean, this would be true home economics. Doing things around the house yourself, learning how to do them with economy, and I think it would be terrific learning how to iron. I mean, look, again, these are all skills that I've picked up, but just a refresher course and some things like, what would I like to know? Like, man, because I have learned a lot now that I've had a house for 3 years. I've just taught myself how to do a lot of things. But I'm trying to think of what else I would really like to know. But think about all the stuff you don't know with your house. And that maybe the stuff that somebody you live with doesn't know. Like, could you look at anybody in your house and go, hey, will you go change the filter in the air conditioning? Would everybody be able to know how to do that? Once you learn, it takes you 10 seconds. But, and we've talked about this on the morning show before, how there should be basic life skill courses taught in school instead of some of the things that are taught. I think shop class should be mandatory. I think home ec should be mandatory. And I think there should also be a basic financial class that is mandatory. How to, I took one of those actually. I was so poor. I was so bad in math because I hated it. And so you may know this about me. Once I realize I don't like something, I don't even try. I just bail. I don't care. I go, this, I have no interest in this. I'm not doing it. So I was flunking Algebra 2. And thankfully, I had a teacher who loved me. And so she let me be like her assistant. And I got credit for the course. But I eventually, the next, I forget what was coming after Algebra 2. I don't know if it was trig or what. But instead of doing that, they went, we have something called, oh man, I wish I could remember the name. It was something like remedial mathematics or something. And all it was how to balance a checkbook and how to budget per month and think. And it was one of the greatest classes I ever took. And I'll be frank, it was for the dumber kids. I mean, it was a bunch of misfits in there. By the way, when I say that, I say it lovingly. Many of my best friends and favorite people were in that class. But boy, if you tried to, if you had us try to do our 54 times 27, we would all struggle. Like it would be but we learned how to do things that a lot of people who could do Algebra 2 get A's in couldn't do. And it was stuff that would, like, we were going to use later in life. I loved that class. That should be for every student, not just the misfits. Now, I don't know that they would teach how to balance a checkbook anymore. But they would probably teach things like, they would probably teach, I would hope that they would teach you about student loans and interest and bank accounts and accrued interest and compound interest and all that stuff. Taxes. How is there not a class about taxes when you're a kid? I mean, maybe you learn about it in civics, or you learn a little bit about it in some math course. But man, oh man, I mean, all this stuff, these should be mandatory. Now, the question then is, well, what do you get rid of? I don't know. Does every kid need to learn chemistry? And I'm not suggesting that they don't. I'm really asking. Does every kid need to know Algebra 2? Does every kid need to learn Spanish? I think we could find a way. I don't know. I think some of that stuff that's in my school, you had to take 2 years of a foreign language. You had to. Well, what if you didn't? What if you could take a foreign language? What if it was more of an elective? I think it should be. And if we're honest, do we really need, Spanish? Americans could use quite often. German and French, these days we may want to consider, if you're going to have mandatory foreign language, maybe Mandarin. We might want to think a little bit more about the future. but yes, anyway. I don't know. I loved all that stuff. I loved shop. Loved it. Look, does every kid need gym even? I was an awkward, uncoordinated, chubby kid. Was gym going to turn me into a terrific athlete? It wasn't. Would I have been better off spending extra time in a shop class, learning basic tools, skills, woodworking skills, metal skills? I think so. I mean, I think it's okay to look at a kid and go, hey, you're not good at this. You're never going to be good at it. Let's go ahead and put you somewhere where you can really focus on a skill that you have and that you want to continue. Well, physical fitness is important for kids. Yeah, it is. But I don't know. Couldn't we also be saving people a lot of emotional stress? I mean, there are a lot of kids out there that gym is just the most painful thing they can go through. Man, oh, man. It was for me at times. You kidding me? And I had skinny phases, like a fair amount of them. I was like the Rob Thomas of my high school. I'd be fat for 2 months and then thin for 2 months and then fat again. So, and even in my skinny day, I couldn't run a mile faster than 9 minutes. It just wasn't my thing. Get me out of here. Put me somewhere else where I can do something that makes me feel good, that I'm good at. I don't know. I'm not trying to dismantle the school system and rebuild it, but I think there are different ways here. I don't think every class is important to every kid. I really don't. Maybe I'm a moron. But what I do think is important are things like shop, things like home economics, things like, I guess it's a well-rounded education is important, but there has to come a point. I mean, does every kid have to take music class every year? What if they suck? We're just going to, you know what I mean? If you can't carry a tune to save your life, get that kid out of there. They're not learning anything. They're not going to get better. Find out what that kid really wants to do. Now. If that kid is bad at singing, but they love it, keep them in. Let them be in there. But if they're bad at it and they're embarrassed and they hate it, get them out of there and let them, that hour, go to an extra art class if that's their thing. Or give them a study hall. Anything else besides wasting everyone's time. I'm just not a big fan of... I'm much more a fan of electives. Let people choose. I don't know. That said, I loved those electives that I did love. I sure loved them. That's what was fun for me in school. Well, I guess that's, that may sound obvious, and that's how it is for all of us. When you were interested in something, it didn't feel like homework. It didn't. You looked forward to going to the class, learning more about it. I loved my shop classes, man. Loved them. Was I the best woodworker? No, I wasn't. But I sure loved it. And I would love to take a shop class now. I would just adore it. And I know that they're out there, and I've actually met some people who run adult shop classes, like these weekends where you go, hey, I'm going to make this bench or I'm going to make this chair. And that's what you do for the weekend. And I have been invited to go to one of those, and I'm going to do it. There's one in Iowa in particular that I'm going to go do at some point. And I think it'll just be a blast and learn a lot too. And I remember one shop class I had. It was in junior high. I hope I can remember this gentleman's name. boy, oh boy, it was, I can't. I apologize. I have since heard that he passed away, but he was one of my favorite teachers because, and by the way, this guy would not have lasted, in today's standards, he would have been fired really early on because what he would do, he was an ex-cop and, he knew a lot. He taught us a lot. He taught us a ton about woodworking and drafting and how to operate, you know, the machinery, all kinds of things, and different types of wood. He really was knowledgeable, and he really did like teaching us. But he was he was one of those teachers where if you misbehaved, he would throw a book at you. I'll never forget. He was telling this one kid to be quiet. The kid kept talking. And the teacher was at the board. I'm bummed out. I cannot remember his name. I'll have to call my brother and ask him what this guy's name was. But he was big and burly and kind of overweight, and he was balding. And he was always so funny. And he... but he was at the board writing about something and this kid wouldn't shut up. And finally the teacher turned around and whipped the piece of chalk at the kid and it hit the kid right in the face. And the kid goes, "Ah!" And the teacher goes, "I told you to shut up." And you know what? None of us flinched. It was just like, okay, yeah, that's how this is in this class. I don't think that would fly today. Well, first off, it wouldn't be chalk. It would probably be a dry erase marker or whatever. I don't think a teacher could get away with it now. But we didn't, back then, and that wasn't that long ago. That was like in 93, 94. It was, yeah, if you talk in, like if I had gone home, if that had been me, and I had gone home and be like, "Ah, man, the teacher threw a piece of chalk at me because I was talking." My dad would have been like, "Well, quit talking." That's what you get for talking when you're not supposed to. So this guy was also great because he would tell us old cop stories. And this is another reason why he probably wouldn't last long in today's climate, because he held nothing back. These stories were as graphic and vile as anything you've ever heard. Now, he didn't use... I heard him use cuss words a couple times in anger, but he didn't use them while telling the stories. But there was I remember one time he accidentally like smashed his finger with a hammer and he yelled the F word. And I laughed for 20 minutes. I was, 15 or something and, or four, I don't remember, but I just howling. So he, I remember one time because if we were good, and like we had time left in class, we could go, "Will you tell us a story?" And he would happily do it. Well, one time he decided to tell us a story about, I'm a little uncomfortable talking about it on this podcast. And here he was telling these young men, there were no, now that I think about it, that particular shop class, no girls. It was all dudes, and that was not done on purpose. I don't think any girls signed up for in this particular class, that hour of that semester. It was only guys, so he really was like, I mean, honestly, he could probably get away with a little bit more because it was all dudes. I had other shop classes in school where, of course, it was a co-ed, but this one, it was not done on purpose. It just turned out, it just ended up that there were no girls in that class. So he starts telling us the story about how he got called to this public park where there were Johnny on the spot. We called them Johnny on the spots, but they were the porta potties or whatever. they had been receiving reports of a man who had climbed down into the porta potty because that's what he liked. He liked being down in the tank while people used the porta potty. That was his thing. That's what he enjoyed it. And and so we're all grossed out and like and just fascinated. We'd never heard of such a thing. And I'll never forget the phrase the teacher used that still makes me laugh to this day. And he goes, yep, yeah, he liked it. So he was just down there, you know, getting it hot off the press. And I remember laughing so hard at that day. And when I think back, that still makes me howl. Man, oh, man. I can't imagine a teacher telling a story like that to a bunch of kids now, even if it is all boys in the class. So anyway, that was such a fun class. What did I make that year? That year I made a cedar birdhouse. And cedar was the wrong choice. I love cedar because I love the smell of it. I love the look of it. Man, there's nothing like planing cedar. A plane, you know what that is. It's like it's kind of long and it's got a razor type thing on it. And you just slide it across the surface of the wood.
Whatever.
Oh, you believe this? Unbelievable. anyway, look up a plane if you don't know what it is. And the smell, those cedar shavings. Oh, but a little too heavy for a birdhouse, I found out. We hung it from the tree. When I was finished, I was very proud of it. I showed my parents. They were, oh my gosh, you did a fine job here. We filled it with seed, hung it from a branch. The branch snapped and the birdhouse fell to the ground and broke. So, I went, oh man, fixed it as best I could with some glue. And then it just sat on the deck banister the rest of its life. It didn't hang from a tree anymore. But I almost lost a thumb in shop class. It was the very first shop class I'd ever taken. And I was making a wall sconce. I forget what wood I was using. And I was using a bandsaw. And so, and I had been taught by the teacher. That teacher's name was Mr. Yuka, and he was crazy tall. He was like 6'7" or something, and he had this booming voice. He eventually became vice principal, but when I knew him, he was a shop teacher, and he we would always sing "My Name Is Yuka, I Live on the Second Floor," which he never found amusing, and so and he had taught us a really good rule when working with tools. Let the saw do the work. You don't have to push the wood into the saw. You slide it and then kind of let the saw take it. You don't have to. Now, you do need to guide it and you do need to apply some pressure. Otherwise, if the wood stops, I mean, yeah, you can get some kickback and stuff like that if you don't. But you don't have to jam the wood into the saw. You don't want to push that hard. Let the saw do most of the work. So I'm at a bandsaw and I'm cutting wood, and I don't know if I hit a knot in the wood, but it got real tough and it wasn't moving through the saw. So man, did I started really pushing. And the shop teacher, Yuka, was so good. He didn't have to see that some of this stuff was happening. He could hear it, because I mean, you can tell when somebody's the sound of a saw taking wood and the sound of somebody pushing wood into a saw, they're different. It would go from zzz to like, I mean, you can imagine. Some of you are well familiar with what that's like. So every now and again, you'd hear somebody really jamming wood and you would go, stop pushing it. He would just yell, and then you could hear the saw relax. Well, I'm really pushing this wood in. And the wood snapped. It snapped. The edge that I was cutting wasn't very thick. The wood snapped. My thumb flew off the piece of wood and went right into the bandsaw. I mean, it was as though I'd just taken my thumb, like I was hitchhiking, turned it to the side, and just pressed it up against the saw blade. My thumb just flew into the saw blade, and it cut really, really deep. It went, I'm not trying to gross anybody out here, but if you were to spread open the wound, you could maybe, I mean, it was really close to the bone is what I'm trying to say. It was really deep. And the poor kid next to me, Steve was his name. So my thumb flies into the saw. I pull it away. And I don't know how I can't tell how deep the cut is. Blood is everywhere. And I look over at Steve, and he was as white as a ghost. His eyes were so wide, and he started to fall to the ground. He was he was as close to fainting as I've ever seen somebody who didn't actually faint. And he got real weak, and he started to go to the ground. I look at my thumb. I can't tell how deep the cut is because of how much blood there is. And I grab my thumb, and I walk over to Yuka, and he sees me, and he just goes, go to the nurse. So I'm taking I'm holding my thumb, and I'm walking quickly through the school hallways. This was the last hour of my day, seventh hour. And blood is just dripping all over the floor. And I go to the nurse, and she's like, oh my gosh. She's quite astounded at the injury. And she put like a butterfly bandage on it and something else. I think she put like some sort of adhesive in the wound and kind of held it together, cleaned me up. And I didn't feel a thing. It didn't hurt at all. I mean, I didn't feel anything. Well, come to find out, I was either in some sort of shock or I don't know exactly. But once she bandaged it and, no stitches. I didn't get stitches in it. It was really deep, but she was able to. She just did whatever she did and bandaged it and it healed up fine. I still have a scar. And when I rub my thumb, I can feel the scar. I can feel where the cut was and everything. And it is visible still. Not crazy, but it's there. But anyway, it's after it was bandaged and like I got home and everything, because I just rode the bus home and got home and explained to my parents what had happened and all that. It started to hurt so bad. And it was... it was really, really painful for quite a few days. So how it didn't, I mean, with the force with which I slammed my thumb into that saw blade was so strong. And I know Steve thought I lost it. I kind of thought I lost it at first too, because you know, things like this happen so quickly, but they feel longer in your head. And in my head, I was like, well, you did it. You cut off your thumb. But no, everything's good. But for a slight scar. And it was my fault. I did not do what I was told. I was really jamming the wood in there. And I tell you what, Yuka may have been like sort of happy, meaning he never had to tell another student in that class not to jam wood into the saw blade, because an example had been set. And boy, yeah. Anyway, ended up finishing the sconce, and it hung in our bathroom at home for quite a while there. I don't know where it is now, but I sure enjoyed shop, and I fear that it's not offered in many schools at all anymore, and it does kind of make me sad. I think they're. Look, jobs like that will never go away. Woodworkers, metal workers, things like that. Like, think about, do you think bricklaying, that job will cease to be complete? We'll always need plumbers. We'll always need electricians. We'll always need brick and mortar workers. Well, masons is what I was looking for there. We'll always need folks who can lay carpet, who can build the frames of houses. I mean, manual labor will never go away. And it's one of the reasons why if I had kids, looking to go into college, I would maybe go, you know what, if you're interested, there are many fine trade schools out there. The guys who I knew went to trade school, by the time they were 20, were making like $70,000 a year. And as a 20 year old, I was blown away. I knew a guy who went to trade school and he became a mason, and he was making six figures by the time he was 21. And I was baffled. Just like, oh my gosh, if you love doing that stuff, because there were jobs right out of the box and good paying jobs. And maybe that's rare that somebody was making that much as like a first or second year mason or whatever. But I mean, he was. So I have to assume other people can too. But nothing wrong at all with a good going to trade school and really learning a trade. It's important. We need you. And if it's something you love, my gosh, go after it. Well, why don't we go ahead and wrap things up with a little what to work on this week? Happy music, because this should be a happy thing. Now, this one may sound a little like a chore, and it is, but it's something I'm going to do this week, and I'd like you to join me. We all have areas in our homes or at work that get a little cluttered, don't we? We've got junk drawers, or we've got a desk that's got stacks of paper and things on it. I say, whatever area is bothering you at work or at home that you have always, that you know, you look at and you go, I really need to clean that up. Let's do it this week. Let's clean up a cluttered area of our lives at some point this week. I think you're going to feel better about it. I know I will. I always do. And yes, scratch that. It's been nagging at you. Well, now it won't. Because you'll have done it. You'll have cleaned up a little bit of clutter, and I think you'll feel pretty good about it. And maybe it'll be a new workspace for you to build your own cedar birdhouse. Or hell, for you to write a poem or paint something or, even just sit back, sit down, get on your laptop or your phone and play a game. Just a nice little space for you. I know I'm going to do that, and I would like for you as well. Hey, a couple quick shameless plugs. Alexandria, Indiana, September 11th, Saturday night. It will be Greg Warren and me and one of our best friends, Sean O'Brien, will be hosting the show at the Alex Theater. You can go to the Alex Theater. You can go to alexmovietheater.com, and that's theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E. It's one of those fancy theaters. Or you can always go to thatjosharnold.com. Go to my schedule. There are links to tickets there. You can get tickets for Alexandria, Indiana, the Alex Theater, Saturday, September 11th. Greg Warren, Josh Arnold, Sean O'Brien. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then the week after, Toledo, the Funny Bone. Jeff Oskey and I will be there that Friday and Saturday. Again, tickets available at thatjosharnold.com. More shows being scheduled and more shows already scheduled coming up. Iowa, a lot of Iowa dates. Peoria, Illinois. Bloomington, Indiana. Fort Wayne, Indiana. A lot of great stuff. So I'll keep you guys all abreast on that. And I don't want you to forget that Labor Day is really a goodbye.